Blog Talk Radio.
Fellow Americans, it is with the utmost pride and sincerity that I present this recording as a living testament and recollection of history in the making during our generation.
Allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is...
What?
My name is...
Dr. Dre.
Yeah. Robert Fortune.
Okay, we get it. Start the show.
I never get old, man. Here we go. It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood. Beautiful day for a neighbor. Yes, of course. Welcome. Friends and folks, of course, Talking Sports for 12 Minutes is officially kicking off. Do not adjust your radio dial. Of course, it is March the 23rd. We are just kind of flying through the month of March. And, of course, you are officially Talking Sports with the 12th man. I'm your host, Andre, joined by some fellow co-hosts. They still got their brackets intact, I think. Let's check it with, of course, my guys, man. I don't know.
Wishful thinking.
One of those days, man. Wishful thinking here. Let's kick in with starting off with my man Robert Ford. How you feeling this evening, sir?
Man, doing great. Couldn't be better.
Short
ready to talk
sweet.
Some
short
sport.
And sweet, huh? Rob is short and sweet. Let's kick it out to my other fellow co-host, Mr. JQ, Jaquan Jenkins. How you feeling this evening, JQ?
I'm good, man. I'm gonna play the Resurrector and get a dance some life. You know, shout out to my man Fife, R.I.P.
Man. Yeah, that's one of those, I could keep rolling with that, man. As a DJ, man, I had this beautiful post about it too, man. Just one of those tragic situations, man. But, yes, man, Tribe Called Quest, shout out to what we always do, man. Just one of those
Midnight
things,
Midnight
Marauders,
Low End Theory, man. Oh, two albums that are classics.
It's Abstract, man. Just one of those things, man. Yeah. I could always, like, flow that, man. But anyway. Kind of dating myself, but without further ado, we always like to
man, you
sports,
both.
Music, all that fun, just music, just that's what it's all about. But without further ado, I know we're a little melancholy. We are going to have some fun. We got to talk a lot of sports, got a lot of things to discuss. As we always do, I want to throw out the numbers if you want to reach out to us, 424-243-9519. That is the number. We are on Twitter. If you go to number 12, THMAN Sports, that is our Twitter handle. And we're also on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/12manSports, or if you put in Talking Sports with 12 Men, you will find us as well. So, gentlemen, let's kick this right off the bat. Of course, we got to talk about the NCAA tournament. There's been a lot of upsets. Don't listen to our last week's show, guys, because it just would have been. I was betting the mortgage on a couple of those games, but let's kind of kick it in now. And Rob, I guess I'll kick it off. He was kind of talk off with some sweet 16 picks on all those eight games. So, sir, you officially have the floor, sir.
Wow, what a crazy weekend, as usual. You know, the crazy thing about March Madness, you know they're going to be upsets every year, but finding which games to pick as upsets is always the hardest thing to do, and this year proved to be no different, especially when you have a team, a 15 seed Middle Tennessee State upsetting the 2 seed Michigan State. And there were some people that thought that Michigan State should have been a 1 seed in this tournament.
Yeah.
And, you know, a 1 seed has never lost in NCAA tournament history, in the first round, that is. A 1 seed has never lost in the first round. And if they were a 1 seed, man, they could have been out in the first round. They should have been the first to do it. So, thankfully, for their sake, they were a 2 seed and didn't get embarrassed and be the first 1 seed to get eliminated in the first round. And there were teams I thought could very easily go all the way to the championship game. And boy, was I wrong.
Right.
Yeah. But getting to some of the Sweet 16 matchups, and a lot of you, I'm sure Andre and JQ and a lot of our listeners remember the name Billy Packer. He covered the NCAA tournament for several years. One of the things he would always say was I think they should reseed the tournament when they get to the Sweet 16. I'm also an advocate for that and wish that was something that they did, but they don't. So we're going to go ahead and make some predictions of some of the games that are left. I'm going to start with the Virginia-Iowa State matchup, the number one versus number four. I tell you what, if you like tight defenses and slow, deliberate offense, this is the game you're going to like.
I like my very basketball. Slow.
Say what?
Pre-shot clock basketball.
Yes, yes. That's exactly what this game is going to be. And I like Virginia in this game. I gave Butler a chance to upset Virginia in the second round, and they really did hung with him tough. But in the end, Virginia proved to be a little too tough. And as you have seen in both the NIT and the NCAA tournament, the ACC is very strong. And we also have a team that was on probation with Louisville, and it could have very well been in this tournament as well if they wasn't on probation. So I'm going to pick Virginia to win this game. I'm going to pick Oregon over Duke. I like to, even though St. Joe's gave Oregon all they can handle, I think Oregon, I think this game is going to be close, though. I still like them to win, though. I like Oregon to win over Duke. And I like Kansas, Perry Ellis. I tell you, he's produced a lot of Pierre Cardins there in Kansas. And so I like Kansas to beat Maryland along with Wayne Selden in that matchup. One of the more intriguing matchups and one that I've had a hard time picking is Oklahoma, Texas A&M. I'm going to go with Buddy Hield and to pull out a close one. A&M's got a lot of athletes on that team, but I'm going to pick Oklahoma mainly because of the conference that they're playing in. As you have seen, the SEC has been pretty weak, and A&M's the last team left in the conference. So I like Oklahoma to move forward in that matchup. I like Villanova over Miami. And Notre Dame, a team I actually predicted on last week's show to go to the Elite Eight, so I think they'll hold true and beat Wisconsin. Out of all 16 teams left in the tournament, Wisconsin is shooting 37% from the field. They're the only team that's shooting under 47%. So I think they're going to their tournament run is going to end with Notre Dame and their up-tempo offense. North Carolina and Indiana, two of the five programs with five or more national championships. I'm going to go with UNC. I think they're too strong down low.
Shocker.
And so I'm going to go with UNC. And last, and yes, least, number 10, Syracuse, number 11, Gonzaga. This looks like an NIT matchup on paper. And but I'm going to go with the ACC, and I'm going to pick Syracuse in this game. They've looked pretty strong in the two games and over Dayton as well. And so I like them in this game over Gonzaga, a team that was a bubble team, but of making the run yet again. And on paper, as I mentioned, looks like an NIT matchup. And so I'm going to go with Syracuse in this matchup. So now as we look at the teams that's left in the tournament, I'm looking at a Kansas-Carolina championship game. Should be a classic. And as much as I hate to say it, I think Kansas will squeak out the victory over the Tar Heels.
JQ, the floor is yours. Talk about tournament.
Yeah, I agree with all of those matchups except for the Miami-Villanova matchup because I just don't trust Villanova. And we talked about how strong the ACC has been in this tournament, and I'm sure that run is going to start to come to a halt here. But I'm going to go with the ACC, so I'm going to go with Miami over Villanova. Can I just talk about for a second and ask why does God hate Cincinnati sports? I mean, goodness. I mean, even not to bring up the Cincinnati-Pittsburgh game, which we all know, but Cincinnati with the dunk that didn't count because it was in his hand like one-tenth of a second after it was in the cylinder, and the fadeaway three-pointer by Wisconsin over Xavier, even though I don't like Xavier, they're from Cincinnati. I just don't understand what we did wrong. Like, what can we do? Do we need to sacrifice a goat? You know, I just don't understand. But as far as the championship game, I would agree with that, with the matchups. But again, I'm just going to ride the strength of the ACC. I mean, they've proven to me, and we talked about it a little bit last week about Duke being seeded a little higher than we thought they should be. But again, they've done nothing but win games and advance multiple teams to the Sweet 16. So I'm going to go with the Tar Heels to cut down the nets.
Well, I hope you're right on that one.
I know you do.
Oh, man. I love the fact that JQ kind of comes out there just talking about, you know, the hate of Cincinnati. There's a lot of love, man. God didn't hate Cincinnati, man, you know. So,
man, they do.
You know,
I'm going to tell you a quick story. You know, people in New Orleans used to think the same thing about the Saints, JQ. And they used to always say, oh, the Saints would never be nothing. They built the Super Bowl on top of a graveyard, the Superdome, that is. Saints would never win because they built the Superdome on top of a graveyard. And Sean Payton came in town and said, hey, we don't believe none of that. And wound up winning the Super Bowl. So there is hope.
Yeah, I'm holding on to the last strand of hope.
Not to bust Cincinnati's bubble even more, but Mick Cronin is considering signing a deal with UNLV to go be their head coach.
So, yeah, and I'm sorry, Andre, but can I talk about that for just like 20 seconds?
Sure.
And this is the dude that came with the Cincinnati and gave away the Jumpman contract, which I thought was the worst move of all time from an apparel standpoint. And then you're going to leave us with Adidas and go to UNLV? Man, come on. Come on. See, that's what I'm talking about. You have people on the West Coast wearing Cincinnati jerseys because it was Jumpman. And now we don't even have that no more. I'm just saying, I don't understand. I just want to understand.
Rob, why you got to bring that up, man? JQ's already in a down place, man. Yeah.
Hey, we're just reporting the news.
He's right. He's absolutely right.
You got to push JQ over the edge over there. Gentlemen, I do want to kind of recap a couple of, you know, games from, you know, obviously, you know, just we talked about kind of the tournament and just Stephen F. Austin doing his thing. You know, they got beat by Notre Dame. That was just a great game. You know, obviously, 14 seed just upsetting the number 3 West Virginia. That was amazing. I do got to talk about, you know, since Syracuse, by the way, they weren't really predicted to do anything. You know, they kind of like backed into the tournament. They ended up like, you know, playing really well. And then obviously, you know, Middle Tennessee State, that was just a great, you talk about like the sound of like shrieking all across America. Just because sometimes you get situations, guys, where Michigan State seems like, you know, with, what is it? Denzel Valentine. He's just one of the best players in the country. And that was really much a really good Michigan State squad, but yet they got beat because it just seems like, you know, the way that Tom Izzo teams the coach, he seems to get more with less. So sometimes you have more of a talented team, but sometimes if you have, you know, maybe more role players, you go a little further in the tournament. Because I know whenever he went to the Final Four last time, he didn't have that great of a squad. I think that squad had Draymond Green or a couple people that you think about that. I know he didn't have the best talented squads, but he just seems to do a great job of coaching too. So just one of those situations where, you know, obviously you talk about shrieking of the brackets. I know you mentioned that earlier too about Michigan State too, so that kind of killed a lot of us.
Yeah.
I do also want to talk about Northern Iowa getting upset by upset. Just kind of the game with Texas A&M. That was an unbelievable comeback, man.
Yes.
Texas A&M coming back, you know, in like 40-something seconds, came back from like 12 points, something crazy.
Yeah.
Just watching that, it was just like that was just insane. And you didn't think that could ever happen, ever. And, you know, to see them just kind of like kind of give that game away, that was just amazing too. So, you know, just some great games. You know, obviously, we'll see how it plays out. You know, obviously, we'll talk about some key moments. I know we kind of went over that in the past couple of times, in the past couple of shows, about some great moments in the NCAA tournament history, too. But anyway, just wanted to bring that up. And it's going to be an interesting Sweet 16, and I can't help but agree with a couple of your picks, too. You know, picking the ACC guys definitely can't go against us. And we'll see if Kansas has the wherewithal to definitely kind of do what they can do and just kind of like do that. You know, we'll see. They haven't been on the cover of Sports Illustrated just yet, so we'll see if that jinx is happening too.
Real fast, Andre, can we a side note? What did Des Moines, Iowa do to deserve a doubleheader of Kentucky and Indiana and then Kansas and UConn? I mean, you got – four of the most storied men's college basketball programs in the past quarter century to half century playing in the middle of nowhere and one of the best doubleheaders. You know, Des Moines probably tripled their revenue in the afternoon and what they've had all year. That to me was just crazy how that worked out in Des Moines.
They must have done something.
Yeah.
They must have sacrificed.
Four storied programs.
Mm-hmm.
They just like, hey, people, let's travel to Iowa. Yeah.
Right, they get the first primary. They get that double hitter. Like I was living right or something. They made it to the Rose Bowl. Like it's crazy.
Yeah.
And then you think about the Kentucky, Indiana, and Kansas. Their fans travel too, so you know you definitely put a nice economic punch right into that city.
That's what I'm saying. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, man, interesting times, my friend. Interesting times, man. That was fun, man. We spent, like, a good amount of time on that topic, man. So let's kind of keep it going here. John Calipari, guy, is going to say the entire Kentucky team will enter the NBA draft. What do you think about that, JQ?
I mean, this is far for the course for him, but I think this is would be – it's hard to say because I can understand them doing it in a very weak draft this year. I mean, I think they might all, you know, play the first round or early second round, but I don't really have a lot of high hopes. The center was supposed to challenge Ben Simmons for the number one pick early on in the year, and, you know, he flamed out. I like the point guard. Is it Tyler? I forget
Ulis,
his last name.
Yeah.
Ulis. He's a monster now, so he might end up being the best one out of that lot, but I can't fault him for going to get their money, especially in this kind of draft where, you know, it's going to elevate them just because they have that Kentucky pedigree behind them. But, you know, this is what John Taylor probably does. He signs and he reloads.
Man, even the walk-ons, Robert, are into the draft, man. What's up with that, bro? I'm going to walk-ons.
Well, I think Calipari is being somewhat facetious here, and he's obviously – this is a recruiting tool for Calipari as well. You know, to put on a front for players who want to come to Kentucky, hey, we're going to send you straight to the NBA. But basically, there's new rules this year for the draft. You can enter the draft, and you can even go through the Portsmouth and Chicago workout camps, kind of like the NBA's version of the combine, and you can pull your name out of the draft. So in the past, you could not participate in these combines unless you are totally in the draft.
Yeah.
Yes, and so now with the new rules, Calipari is saying, hey, we can put all of our guys in the draft. You know, they can come back to school as long as they don't sign with an agent. And so I think that's what he's promoting. I mean, realistically, this Kentucky team has five NBA prospects on it. You mentioned Tyler Ulis, and in my book, he's a heck of a basketball player, but based on NBA standard, he's a second-round pick, and mainly because of his size, you know, being a like 5'9 point guard. And so, you know, he's pretty adamant about going to the NBA. So, in Scale Labarcier, the big man who JQ was talking about, I mean, he's dropped down to somewhere around 9 or 10. Jamal Murray, in my opinion, is probably the best NBA prospect, scoring two guard. He can shoot the lights out, and he can really come in and, I think, help a ball club, you know, right away. And, you know, Isaiah Briscoe and Alex Poitras, I mean, they're down-the-line kind of draft picks, too. And to me, in the NBA, it's like if you're not going to be a first-round pick, you should go back to school because none of those other contracts are guaranteed. So even Tyler Ulis, in my opinion, should come back to school. And probably Jamal Murray and Scale Labrassier should be the only two that realistically, you know, has a chance to go in the top 10.
Yeah, wow. But I want to go to school, too.
Yeah, that's true. We found that out with Ben Simmons. He didn't want to go to school.
Right.
I'm not going to talk about Ben Simmons anymore, man. I have to hold the conversation, too. But, yeah, like you said, gentlemen, I would just say, like you said, Rob, good points about that. You know, I'm kind of happy that it does give the players opportunity to at least kind of test the waters, if you will. But it does kind of bring back some nostalgia because back in the day, you know, you had players that were say, and this is kind of one of the situations too we can talk about, you know, paying the players. You had situations where you knew, like, man, Christian Leitner's coming back next year. We got to retool or we got to get better. And I just think it made players better. It made the game better because they stayed and they matured as men, as young men. Into, you know, men until, you know, they went to the league too. So it's just one of those situations where, you know, I'm not saying John Calipari is wrong or bad or anything like that because he's kind of working within the system, like you said, JQ, but I just think it makes the product better if players will actually mature, you know, and just it makes it better, a better game to know, man, okay, like, you know, I know we talk about the story programs, the Dukes, North Carolina, to see, like, these players coming back and becoming better players and better men, if you will. All right, that's my two cents. We got about 11 minutes, guys. Let's kind of talk about the new NFL rules, and I know the meetings are going on right now. Rob, let's kick it off to your favorite person, Roger Goodell. He's down there. I know he may not be judge, executioner, and jury, but what's happening with a couple of these new rules are going on right now? One of them is going to affect my Falcons here, but go ahead, Rob.
Well, the two that I think we, well, at least I want to talk about anyway, is the kickoff rule, the change where a touchback now, the football is going to come out to the 25-yard line, similar to the college. So they're picking up that rule. And so And in other words, I think this is a play the NFL wants to do away with. Based on studies, this is the play that creates the most injuries in the game of football. And so, you know, a touchback, you know, you're getting it out to the 25-yard line. And you know, you're kicking off from like the 35, 40. Most NFL kickers can kick a ball 5 yards deep in the end zone with ease. So, you know, this is a play that's practically being eliminated in football. So they're going to try this for a year. They're going to come back and restudy it and see if they want to keep it that way or do they want to eventually get rid of the kickoff, you know, altogether. So we'll see what happens.
That's what's going
as a result of that. So I don't have a problem with that rule change. I think the one I do have a problem with is the two unsportsmanlike conduct penalties and automatic ejection. And so that's the other one. That's the one I'm not so fond of because I think, you know, I think guys will, you know, I think guys will try to create this. I think guys are going to try to force these sportsmanlike conduct penalties to get guys out of the game. And, you know, guys do have to keep their cool. I mean, that's part of it. And so I totally understand that. But I'm still not a huge fan of the rule. And it sounds like most coaches are not a good fan of the rule either.
JQ.
Yeah, and the third one, I'm all in favor of the chop block rule. I think it's just dirty to come behind somebody and take their knees out. You talk about ending somebody's career potentially. The two unsportsmanlike, I'm not totally against. It's more like a yellow-red card system that soccer has, and I think it's more just to hold players accountable, and I think it's you could probably call it the OBJ or Josh Dorman rule for the most part.
Trying to keep people
in line. I think that's really what it's geared to. But they don't necessarily have to have it on the flip side because if you would just call those egregious plays, you know, personal fouls and eject people for it, then you don't necessarily need that rule because you can always eject them from making a play that's, you know, not pertaining to the game of football. I don't necessarily like the kickback rule, and I understand the rule, the thing about it with the safety, but I think the NFL is tongue-in-cheek with the safety when you still have owners like Jerry Jones saying that there's no link between, you know, CTE and football, which I think is just an absolute joke. But the reason why I have a problem with it for the most part is because you're basically eliminating 32 jobs out of the league because there are some guys that are only in the league because they are a good return man. And if you take that out of the game, then you're basically rendering them useless and you're taking a job away. And you may be able to add depth to another position, taking away that kick return position, that kickoff return position. But, you know, there are guys in the league, like we talked about, like a Devin Hester, who makes his money purely on returns. And can he make his money just off punt returns in a contract as opposed to punt and kickoff returns? So I have some problem with that because you're affecting guys' livelihoods on that by basically eliminating that position.
Yeah, that's a tough call on both sides. I mean, because, you know, the kickoff, that's one of the most violent plays. And it is, like we said, we're going to test it out. And Rob kind of nailed it. I think eventually it's going to be gone. I mean, they're going to say, why don't you just give the offensive ball in the 20 and just kind of let it go, which, you know, you talk about taking jobs from, you know, players, but also you can take jobs from the special teams coaches because you coach to kind of say, hey, it's a special teams thing. This is kind of what our wedge. So I think that kind of plays into that too. But so I'm kind of torn, gentlemen, because, you know, it's tough to see that play go because then you're missing kind of a piece of football because that's a third of the game. You know, yeah, you can punt and stuff like that too, but kicking off is kind of, you know, you could get – that does affect field position, you know, and I know you can kick it away for somebody too, or if the kicker kicks it and, you know, he misses it and, you know, kicks it out before it gets to the end zone and they start at the 40, I mean, that's a huge deal, man. So I don't know, NFL, I'm not quite 100% sure about this, but, you know, like I said, we'll see how it plays out for a year. But, gentlemen, I do think if everything does go the way, we may kind of see the end of that, which is kind of a tragic situation as well. And as Rob said, on Roger Goodell. Yeah, good.
Well,
Rob.
Here's the other thing that you have to consider, too, with this situation. I don't have a problem with them giving the team the ball at the 25-yard line. I want to make that clear. That's the thing I don't have a problem with. But I would have a problem if they get rid of it altogether. And here's why, because you eliminate onside kick possibilities and, you know, teams may want to gain an extra possession with onside kick possibilities off their kickoff. And so I wouldn't want them to get rid of it altogether, because you still want to keep that element in the game. And I'm not just talking about onside kicks at the end of a game when you're down by two touchdowns trying to get the ball back. But, you know, teams every now and again do a sneak onside kick in the first, second quarter of the game just to gain an additional possession.
Mm-hmm.
And so you'll lose that element. And so I don't want to see the play gone altogether, because how teams are going to be able to create those extra possessions other than, you know, fake punts and things of that nature. But I think you want to keep that element in the game. As, you know, you saw that when the Saints and the Colts was in the Super Bowl, the opening kickoff of the second half was an onside kick. I mean, that was a huge factor in that game where the Saints was able to gain additional possession. And so I hope, you know, that's that part of the element. That's part of the game you don't want to see go away.
And to your point, Andre, you're absolutely right. To your point, you're absolutely right. The strategy of it, if I have a Devin Hester or somebody of his ilk back there returning kicks and you kick it out of bounds trying to keep it from him, even with these rules, and you gain an extra 15 yards, that's huge. That's like getting a personal foul call. You know, I mean, I don't like that being taken out of it. So there's also that piece of the onside kick from a strategy, but also a strategy of you can't kick it to my return guy because he's too dangerous, and it makes you think about how you want to kick it off, and you might kick it out of bounds, which gives us an extra 15 yards. So that's what I'm like. I understand the player safety, but until they take a full-on aggressive approach to all facets of player safety, then I'm not going to be signing off on that of, oh, we got to protect the players because you're only doing it on this part, but you still are wanting to go to an 18-game schedule and not really give the concussion protocol. You know what I mean? The severity and the insight that it deserves to be looked into. So I think it's like a diversion tactic to say, see, we're actually doing something about it, but then you're ignoring the other pieces that are just important to player safety.
Yeah.
It's still a violent game.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And like you said, too, I agree with you, JQ, too. Like, you know, the personal foul rule, that was definitely put in regards to Josh Norman and OBJ. They definitely did that just because for those two, because they were just going back and forth. So just a way to police that, to kind of keep that into effect. And also, you know, what's the king, Tlaib, man, that dude was going ham too, man. So keep those players that keep hurting folks, you know, say you keep on doing this, man. I don't think finding him is working, man. So, you know, just kind of kick him out the game too. So anyway, that'll affect your squad as well. All right, gentlemen, we got 2 minutes and 47 seconds. Let's briefly talk about JQ's favorite team, the Rams. They're on Hard Knocks and the 2018 game in China. JQ, go ahead, sir. Your boy, Jeff Fisher, I'm back. Can't get rid of me.
Yeah, that guy right there, I mean, he's got naked pictures, I promise. But, you know, I think for the Rams, that's a good move for them, moving to L.A., you know, going into that the second largest market in the United States, and especially if they ever succumb and realize that Case Keenum was not the guy and they bring in, like, an RG3 or Colin Kaepernick, not saying that they're the answer, but the amount of excitement and intrigue that will bring to their team and then putting it on display is beneficial to them, and also going to China. So I think that's a very shrewd PR move by the Rams in terms of kicking off their relocation and getting fans back on their side by putting them on Hard Knocks.
Man, we'll talk about that. You know, Jeff Fisher's going to get more fans. Rob, talk about that and then go ahead and set it up for the OT portion, sir. It's all on you.
Well, I think this is definitely a good marketing tool for them to go Hard Knocks, for return to Los Angeles and create that fan base and get them excited about returning to Los Angeles. So I think that's a big part of it. Obviously, with them posting a home game in China in 2018, and I've actually done some studies on this personally about the economy in China. I was the second largest in the world now. And the NBA has done a phenomenal job capitalizing off of it. And now you're seeing the NFL is getting ready to try to capitalize off of it too, and trying to play a regular season game in China and also get them excited and using their phones to watch the game, Super Bowls and things like that over there in China as well. So that's pretty big too for the Rams as well. But those are some things for them. You know, developing that brand there in Los Angeles and helping them to develop a global brand as well. But next week we'll be on, if it's okay with the gentlemen, we'll be on Tuesday night on next week, 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 10 p.m. Central Standard Time, 8 p.m. for our friends on the West Coast. Make sure you join us next week as we'll be preparing for the Final Four NFL coverage, free agency draft still going on. And also, of course, getting ready for the NBA playoffs. So you don't want to miss our show on next Tuesday night. We look forward to having you guys listening in on next week. Good night, people.
JQ,
Stay classy, San Diego, and RIP, Fife.
Love it, man. What a sign off, man. Appreciate that. All right, gentlemen, we're officially into the OT portion, and let's kick it off. We're still going to talk some NFL here. And the Patriots did not sue to recoup their first-round pick. And, Rob, I know Bill Belichick may not be happy with everything that's going on. So why do you think Robert Kraft didn't move forward with this, Rob?
Well, I'm sure you all have heard, as well as probably quite a few of our listeners, Robert Kraft sent a letter requesting that the NFL give them their first-round draft pick back, and obviously Roger Goodell said that's a no-go. But basically, if you notice, the players have the right to sue the league and fight. You know, you saw that with the Saints players and the Bounty case, and obviously the Saints won in court. And you know, judges finding no proof of a bounty gate existing. And the same thing in this situation with Tom Brady, where the judges found no proof of a deflate gate even existing. But the owners and coaches, as you even saw with Bounty Gate, where the Saints coaches still will have to serve a suspension, they can't sue the league. And based on the legalities, and so they once you're an owner in the National Football League, you cannot sue the league for these kind of issues when it comes to disciplinary issues. Now, Al Davis did it in regards to another issue back in the day. Al Davis is renegade, of course, and but for disciplinary issues like this, the owners cannot sue the National Football League. So a lot of fans are wondering, particularly Patriots fans, why Robert Kraft did not sue the league, and this is basically the reason why he basically can't. You know, so the players can fight back, and ultimately the players have been winning, the ones that have fought back. But obviously the owners and Tom Benson, even with the Saints, was livid with Roger Goodell and wanted to do everything he could, but there was nothing he could do in that situation.
Don't bite the hand that feeds you, JQ.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this is what they signed their contracts to. So it may suck for your franchise, and in particular for the Patriots. I won't, you know, shed any tears for them. But when you sign that on for that to be the particular course of action that you decide that you can or can't take, then you just have to live with the consequences as an NFL owner and as a coach. And they're paying millions of dollars in compensation. So, you know, you have to live with it, and sometimes it's good for you, sometimes it's bad for you. So it doesn't, not just because it's the Patriots, it's just that, you know, you have to honor the contract that you signed, and that is in the stipulations of the contract that you signed to be an owner or a coach. So nothing more to see here. Move along.
It's just because it's the Patriots, America. Don't let them fool you.
Oh my gosh. It is.
If it was the Bengals, it would be the same way. You signed up for that. When you signed the contract, I take it to this, to the Marshawn Lynch and not going to the post-game interviews, and everybody said, well, he's a martyr, and he didn't have to do this. But yeah, he does. He signed the contract, and the CBA says that you have to do this. So when you decided to make those millions of dollars and live in this big house and play this sport, you signed up for all the things that go along with it, which means you have to do these press conferences, or if you're a coach or an owner, which means you can't sue the league. I mean, it's par for the course. You signed up for it. It is what it is.
I'm just here.
America.
I'm just here to get
paid. If it's the Patriots, if it's the Cleveland Browns, if it's the Pittsburgh Steelers, and if it's the Baltimore Ravens and the Michigan Wolverines, if any of those teams are getting punished, he don't care if they're innocent or not. Punish them.
Ban them for life.
Oh, man. I love it. All right. We're going to move in. I want to talk about the Hawks, so I'm kind of curious what Rob's going to say about this before we do some stuff, too. But Chip Kelly said that weird Eagles organization led to his dismissal. I'll worry about that because Chip Kelly was weird himself. But, Rob, what do you hear about this from this Spanish point? Go ahead.
Well, I think you pretty much stole my story. I would Chip Kelly seemed like the weird one to me with some of the moves he was making, some of his comments,
right,
and the way that he was going about running the Eagles organization. It seems to me he was the weird front office personnel slash head coach of the Philadelphia Eagles. So now I'm willing to – now they've been still making moves after his departure. Doug Peterson has came in and kind of shipped some of the guys that Chip Kelly brought in and shipped them away. So, I mean, they're still making moves, but we'll kind of have to see. Doug Peterson's approach seems to be more quiet and more methodical than Chip Kelly's approach. So we'll have to see if this is really a weird organization, if you will. But some of the moves they've made, I've kind of liked so far, and some of them we'll just have to wait and see.
Hey, JQ, any Oregon player can play for the 49ers. Go ahead, Rob.
Exactly. I was like, come on, Chip. Somebody please take his microphone away from him. Do not schedule him for any more press conferences. You know, disassemble the podium. Stop talking to that guy because he's just talking out the side of his neck. I mean, when the whole organization, within a year of you being fired, tries to undo every possible roster move that you have made in your tenure there, that lets you know how bad you have messed it up. So, again, nothing to see here. This is just Chip Kelly and some bad blood trying to save face against the Philadelphia Eagles. I mean, yeah, whatever, bro. Worry about what you're going to do at quarterback and get back to me come September.
It looks like they're going to be keeping Kaepernick, so that should be interesting.
Yeah,
I think he's going to draft one in the first round, though.
Yeah. Good luck with that.
Yeah. 10 minutes here, gentlemen. LeBron said he wants to form a super team with his brotherhood, with his NBA brotherhood, if you will. Do you know anything about this, JQ? What's the French toast? What's up?
Yeah, I read the report on Bleacher Report. It's pretty funny because, I mean, is Dwayne Wade going to play when he's 47? Because, I mean, he's almost at the end of the line here. I mean, you can make a case for LeBron and Chris Paul and Carmelo Anthony, but Dwayne Wade's not leaving Miami. So let's be real honest. And the fact that you come back to Cleveland, you might as well just not even talk to anybody if you leave Cleveland for a second time. That's the whole I'm coming home and writing letters to SI. I mean, nobody's coming to Cleveland. That might be where you're from, but nobody's coming to Cleveland to come hang out and play with you, bro. It's just not getting ready to happen. So unless you are talking about putting them on the, you know, Jordan brand at a significant uptick in what they already are getting, I can't see that happening. That's just pie in the sky. Those are my friends. I would love to have a dream, you know, playground basketball team with them. But who's going to do that? Who's leaving Miami? Who's leaving New York? Who's leaving L.A. to come play in Cleveland? And I'm from Ohio, and that's just not going to happen. Nah, bro.
Rob. Rob,
well, y'all know Cleveland, the nickname for Cleveland is a mistake by the lake. So, I'm a Cavs fan, too, and I'm saying that.
Mistake by the lake.
That's what they call it.
By the lake. But of those three players you mentioned, I would agree with you, Wade, Paul. I think the one guy that possibly could leave is Carmelo. I know it is New York. But I think that situation in New York is just kind of rotten, and it may be time for a change. I think he may need a change. The Knicks organization may need a change. And, you know, Andre is my witness. I probably said this for 10 years now, that Carmelo will never win a championship as a lead guy. And he will have to be a second, third, or fourth option on a ball club in order to win a championship. And so he would be the one guy I think that would possibly consider even going to Cleveland. The mistake by the lake, whatever you want to call it. And I think he would be the one guy that could possibly leave and say, let me give this a shot and see what we can possibly do together. But, you know, Chris Paul leaving L.A., you know, with DeAndre Jordan, Blake Griffin and that group, it'd be hard for me to see that happening. And also, as JQ mentioned as well, Dwayne Wade is, you know, he barely can play 60 games a season right now. So I just can't see him leaving as well.
Yeah, I was waiting for JQ to say something. This is my thought, guys. I think, you know, LeBron, he's not talking about playing during the regular season. He's talking about just playing the pickup games, man, in New York, man, Rucker Park, man. That's what he's like, I want to bring you guys together to form a super team. Man, that's what he was talking about, man. He wasn't talking. That was a joke, man. Okay. All right, gentlemen.
Well, you know, these things, too, I you know, LeBron, he's basically already attempted to put together one super team in Miami and another one here in Cleveland. And obviously they did win two championships in Miami. Now Cleveland, these young guys, Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love, have never won anything. So it's been kind of hard with this particular situation here to play with those guys. But, you know, number one, you still have to have great chemistry. And the one thing that LeBron has yet to have in his is he hasn't had a great coach. He has not had the Phil Jacksons of the world. He's not had the great Popoviches of the world. And I think that's the one thing that's kind of hurt him. Yes, he has two championships, and he'll probably go down as one of the top three players in NBA history. But he's never had that great coach in his career.
Yep, yep, yep. All right, seems like JQ got dropped off, so we'll get him back on here. So Rob, let's talk about the Hawks here. I'm curious what you're going to talk about with this impossible situation with Al Horford. Tell me what you're hearing here on the street here.
Well, the Hawks had a dilemma here. Al Horford is 30 years old. Al Horford wants a big contract. He wants a long-term contract. The Hawks had a dilemma here. Do we give him a 2-year deal? Do we give him a 3-year deal? At this stage of his career, they don't want to. Obviously, he's having a very good season this season, and it's probably the face of the franchise for the Hawks. And the Hawks are just, you know, at a point here. Do we want to start over with Dennis Schroeder and let him lead the way, and let's start from scratch and move on from Horford and Jeff Teague and let Schroeder be our lead guy going forward and see what kind of young team you can develop? The Hawks are very high on Kent Bazemore, too, and, you know, what kind of young guys they want to move forward with. So they have a big dilemma here this offseason. You know, if we do keep Horford, how long do we want to keep him at that age, or do we just let him walk and we start from scratch?
You know, I was going to say, too, Rob, it feels like, you know, if here in Atlanta, a couple things we're talking about is that, you know, they're pretty much committed to Al Horford right now and Kenton Bazemore because of the fact they think they're great guys. Now, I don't think they're going to get, like, the ultimate max, though. I think they're going to get just a little bit below it. But the word on the street is that they are really committed to Al Horford and to Kenton Bazemore, believe it or not, because they're great team guys. You don't hear any type of, you know, feedback about them, you know, being bad guys or, you know, whatever for the community and whatnot. So I do think, in spite of the challenges that you presented, that I do think they are going to re-sign. Like I said, I don't think he's going to get, like, the max super deal, but he's probably going to get just enough to kind of say, all right, you know, you're still part of the Hawks. And like you said, I don't think they want to start completely over. I do think there may be some good offers for Jeff Teague next year as far as trading, and Dennis Schroeder will take over the team. You know, but we'll see how that plays out. That's kind of what I'm hearing here in Atlanta right about now, too. So, you know, I don't know. We'll go from there, too. I guess, Rob, this kind of finished. It looks like JQ can't join us. So, we'll bring back some old times, but we can always listen to that, too. Let's kind of kick off the fantasy shout-outs here. I definitely get that before we talk about Chandler Parsons and A-Rod, if you will. So go ahead, sir.
Yeah, we're obviously in the semifinals of our playoffs here in our fantasy basketball league. We thank everyone for competing. Our co-host, yep. Who's not with us at the moment, JQ, the Ohio Players, last week had a big 7-1 victory to move into the semifinals. And so far this week he's off to an 8-0 start, so he's playing very strong as well. And you know, give a shout-out to him as we move forward here in our playoff round here in our fantasy basketball league. And next week, as I mentioned earlier, we'll be on Tuesday night next week. That's 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 10 p.m. Central, and 8 p.m. Pacific. We have NBA coverage, we have NFL, we have draft coverage, and we have the Final Four preview on next week. And Andre already mentioned, we talk about Chandler Parsons, a huge blow for the Mavericks. Are they probably going to be going to the playoffs? Don't expect him to go too far. I didn't expect him to go far with them, so definitely won't go too far without him there in the Western Conference. So definitely a big blow to the Dallas Mavericks.
Yeah, that's pretty huge right now, too, because the Dallas Mavericks are playing well. So, you know, that's a big blow. We'll see how that affects them coming, if they're going to hit the playoffs and stuff like that, too, as well, Rob. So we'll keep an eye on that situation. Really quickly, we got a minute. I don't know if you want to talk about A-Rod really quickly and kind of wrap up the show as we get ready to wrap up this edition of Talking Sports with 12 Men.
Yeah, A-Rod only has 2 years left on his contract, 2016 and 2017 season. He hinted that he might retire at the end of this season, but he came back and refreshed that, says, I have 2 years on my contract. I plan to play him out.
Suckers.
And then we'll see what happens from there with the Yankees. So we'll see as he's definitely winding down his career.
That's it. Yeah, like I said, you know, I don't think anyone's going to miss A-Rod if he retires, man. But that's a whole other conversation. But, yeah, You know, shout out. We'll talk about our thoughts about him being a Hall of Famer for sure, Rob. I'll get your thoughts about that too next week too. But yeah, like we said, thank you for listening, folks. We appreciate all the love. Anything else you want to say, Rob, before we wrap up this particular show?
Well, rest in peace, Joe Gary Gola. And if you watched baseball as a kid in the 80s like I did,